Even people who don't really know much about Bible prophecy at all have heard something about the beast or the Antichrist. Those are terms really kind of well known in our culture. And especially people have heard about 666 or the mark of the beast. I mean, even people that don't really know much about the Bible at all have heard about these things. And Revelation chapter 13 is the chapter really that sets forth for us more clearly than anywhere in the Bible the truth that we know about the coming world ruler or the Antichrist. In fact, I call Revelation chapter 13 the Antichrist chapter of the Bible. It's kind of like, you know, Genesis 1 is the creation chapter, and 1 Corinthians 15 is the great resurrection chapter, and Hebrews chapter 11 is the great faith chapter. Well, to me, this is the Antichrist chapter of the Bible, if you will. It describes this coming world ruler. And remember, we left off last time with Satan being enraged with the woman, with Israel. And he couldn't get at this group that God has taken and is protecting. So he goes off to make war with this believing remnant of Israel. But then in chapter 13, it begins with these words, "And he stood on the sand of the seashore." Now the he there is Satan. And he says, "I saw a beast coming up out of the sea." So Satan's standing on the seashore, and it's like he's beckoning or calling this beast up out of the sea. So this beast is an instrument that Satan's going to use to carry out his nefarious purposes. And so we have a beast introduced here. And then down in verse 11, he says, "I saw another beast coming up out of the earth." So we have two beasts here in Revelation 13, the beast out of the sea and the beast that comes up out of the earth. Again, these are the human instruments, the primary human instruments that Satan uses in his effort to destroy the Jewish people, but also to dominate the world and to receive worship. This coming world ruler is described for us in the first 10 verses. The first beast here that comes out of the sea, he's more of what I would call kind of the political ruler who's going to come forth in the end times. And the second beast that comes out of the earth is more like a religious or a commercial or economic type ruler. And so they work together, though, hand in glove. And these are the two instruments that Satan uses to accomplish his purposes. Now we need to understand who this beast is here. And he says, "I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads. And on his 10 horns were 10 diadems or crowns, and on his heads were blasphemous names." So he sees this beast coming up out of the sea, and it has 10 horns. Now, immediately, if we know the Old Testament, what is that reminiscent of? Daniel chapter 7, where Daniel there sees these beasts come up out of the sea. The first one is a lion type of a beast. It's Babylon. And the second beast he sees is this huge bear, it's Medo-Persia. Then he sees this leopard that is the Greek Empire. And then the fourth one is this kind of nondescript beast with great iron teeth, and it has 10 horns. So that's the picture that we see here. This is that fourth beast here that Daniel saw. And you'll notice in verse 2, says, "The beast I saw was like a leopard, and his feet like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion." Now, those are the other three beasts that Daniel saw in Daniel 7. But notice in Daniel, it was the lion and the bear and the leopard, because Daniel is seeing them from the prophetic viewpoint. He's seeing them before they arrive. And when John writes about them here, it's the leopard, the bear, and the lion, because John is looking back now from the viewpoint of history on these three previous empires. So this beast kind of embodies all of these previous empires of Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece, but it's like that final beast that he sees there. Now, in Daniel chapter 7, this beast that he sees that has 10 horns pictures the Roman Empire. And there was a historical aspect of the Roman Empire that's come and that's gone, that's already been fulfilled. But he sees a final form of the Roman Empire with 10 horns. And those 10 horns in Daniel chapter 7 are 10 kings or 10 rulers. And we know that Rome has never been ruled over by 10 kings or 10 rulers. So that form of the Roman Empire has to be future. And that's what we're seeing here in this. This beast is this final form of Gentile world power. But The beast here is an empire, but it's also the ruler of that empire. This is an individual. It's not just the empire, but it's the one who rules over it. It's kind of like in Daniel chapter 2, when Daniel pointed to Nebuchadnezzar and said, "You are the head of gold." Babylon was the empire, but Nebuchadnezzar, as the head of that empire, was really its culmination. And it's the same way. The beast here is this final form of Gentile world power, a reunited Roman Empire under 10 kings, but primarily it looks at the individual, because we're going to go through here and see that it uses personal pronouns for this person. And so I believe this first beast here is this final world ruler, the satanic Superman, if you will, that's the last dictator of the world and will rule like no one ever has before. People don't realize it, but there are about 100 passages in the Bible that describe the origin, the nationality, the character, the career, and the conquest of this final world ruler. He's known by a lot of different names. He's called the little horn in Daniel chapter 7, verse 8. He's called the prince who is to come in Daniel chapter 9. He's called the willful king in Daniel chapter 11. He's called the man of sin in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. He's called the son of perdition in 2 Thessalonians. In the books of 1 and 2 John, there's reference there to the Antichrist. Now, that word only appears 5 times in the New Testament in those books. But that's kind of the title we've come to use for this person. But he's called in chapter 6 and verse 2 of Revelation, he's the rider on the white horse. And then here in this passage that gives the most full-blown description of him, he's called here the beast. He's this ruler who comes forth to dominate the world. There's a quote I read years ago. Paul Henry Spock was the first president of the UN General Assembly, and he was a key planner in the formation of the European Economic Community back in 1957. This is what he said: "We don't want another committee. We have too many already. What we want is a man of sufficient stature to hold the allegiance of all the people and to lift us up out of the economic morass into which we are sinking. Send us such a man, and whether he be God or devil, we will receive him." Now, that was true then, that people needed help getting lifted out of the economic morass. How much more is it true now? People say, "You send us a man, if he be God or a devil, we will receive him." Well, that's exactly what's going to happen according to Scripture. In the end times, it says in verse 3, "I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. And they worshiped the dragon and gave him his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast, and who is able to wage war with him?'" Something I want to just talk about here for a moment, because this comes up so often. Many people that take the book of Revelation preteristically or past, they believe that Nero is this beast here, that it was fulfilled in Nero back in the first century. One of the things that they do is they go on, and we'll talk about this a little later, but it says about down in chapter 13, verses 16 to 18, that the number of this beast is 666. It's the number of a man's name. And what they do is they go and they show that if you take Neron Kaiser or Neron Caesar and you put that in the Hebrew language, it does equal 666. Now, there are problems with that, because why would you use Hebrew when you're writing to a Greek-speaking audience? Also, for the preterists to make this work, they have to use a name and a title. They have to use Nero and Caesar. So not just his name, but they have to add the title Caesar, where it says in the text that's the number of his name. So they have to kind of move things around a little bit, but it is true that Neron Caesar equals 666. So why would we say that this doesn't apply to Nero? Well, let me just mention a couple of things here. One is the early church consistently applied Revelation 13 to a future final Antichrist. Irenaeus did, Andreas, Primatius, Victorinus wrote the first commentary, the oldest one that we have. These men all saw this as being a future person. If it was so clear that it was Nero, why didn't people nearest to the time see that connection? So, I mean, that's a real problem. Secondly, Nero didn't have a second beast that's described here in verses 11 through 18 that was promoting him like this person here. What they'll say, preterists, they'll say, well, there was a man named Gessius Florus. He was the Roman governor or procurator of Judea under Nero, and that he was this beast out of the earth. Well, the problem is Gessius Florus never did any of the things that says this beast out of the earth does. So they're just kind of, to me, again, it's grasping at straws. Now, Gessius Florus, if he'd done anything close to what is described here, Josephus would have recorded these astounding events, I think, for us. Thirdly, and this is the most devastating thing to the Nero view, is that preterists take the reference to 666 as the value, the gematria value of Nero's name. And they take the 42 months here when he reigns as the time span when Nero persecuted Christians in Rome. But then the problem is they can't show how everybody on the earth worshiped him, how he was killed and came back to life, how all the people on the earth have to take his mark on the right hand of the forehead and all of that. None of those things were literally fulfilled in Nero. So they try to pick a couple things and say, well, Nero fits these things, but then all the other things, they try to spiritualize it. I say, well, the mark of the beast, that isn't a literal thing. That's like the marking of the 144,000 back in chapter 7 on their foreheads. Well, they're different words that are used. This is a marking that's going to take place on the right hand of the forehead. So again, I think we want to go with the early church in this and go back and say, look, this is a person who's yet future to today, who's going to come on the scene. Now, a couple questions to answer here. It says in verse 3, I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed the beast. When you go down to verse 12, it says, he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. And then down in verse 14, at the end of the verse says, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. So whatever this beast is, it dies and comes back to life. Now some will say, well, this is referring to the empire. You know, the Roman Empire died historically and it's going to come back to life. And that's what's being spoken of here. Well, it says that whenever this beast dies and is slain and comes back to life, the whole world's going to be amazed and follow after him. I don't think an empire coming back to life would create that kind of amazement in the world where people would just fall all over this person and worship him as God. I think this is referring to the fact that this world ruler who is the epitome of this empire is actually going to die and come back to life. You say, well, that raises some big problems. Can Satan bring somebody back to life? Well, the problem is when it talks here about the Antichrist receiving a fatal wound and it talks later here about him being slain, it's the same word used of Jesus being slain back in Revelation chapter 5. So it says Jesus is slain, says he's slain. It's the same word. He dies and comes back to life. And then the same word that's used of him coming back to life is used also earlier in Revelation of Jesus coming back to life. So if the death and resurrection of Jesus is real, the same words used of this man, his death and resurrection must be real as well. So what I think is going to happen is this. The tribulation period is going to be a time, according to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, when God is going to send upon people strong delusion. He's going to allow there to be delusion in this world unlike any time in history. And part of that delusion is God is going to allow Satan to bring this man back to life who has died. And it says he's going to receive the wound of the sword. So it may be that he is assassinated or killed violently in some way. And that would certainly get the world's attention. I mean, they're going to follow after him and say, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? They're going to be amazed. Again, think about today on CNN, seeing the funeral of John F. Kennedy years ago, or of Lady Di, or some of these other famous people. You have a worldwide funeral procession for them. And they get their body down to the cemetery and they unload the coffin from the hearse and the top of it comes open and the person crawls out of the coffin. And that's the kind of thing that I think is going to happen in the end times as part of the delusion. In fact, over in Matthew 24, Jesus says that the delusion during the tribulation and the signs and wonders will be so great that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. People have no idea what's going to be going on in the earth during this period of time. So I think this is a real person. a real person, the beast. He's a person. He's the head of this beast empire. But he's going to literally die and literally come back to life again. Of course, he rules the world for 42 months. And I like this 6 times in this passage. Notice it says, and there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words. And it was given to him to make war with the saints. 6 times it was given to him. In other words, it's showing us God is the one ultimately who's sovereignly in control here. But he rules the world for 42 months. He's going to rule the world economically, politically, and religiously. This final great world empire. But like in verse 8, it says, and all who dwell on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who's been slain. So again, it's this reference to God's elect whose names are written in the book of life. Then it says, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. Notice here, he doesn't say, if anyone has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Remember that earlier? The church is omitted here because the church isn't on the earth. But here's a word of great comfort. If anyone is destined for captivity, to captivity goes. If anyone kills with the sword he must be killed. Here is the perseverance and the faith of the saints. Saying, as bad as it is, the saints can rest in the fact God has it under control. If someone's destined for captivity, they're going to go to captivity. If they kill with the sword, they're going to be killed by the sword. God's in control. God is going to take care of the beast, ultimately. So God's people can rest in that comfort. Now the next thing we see here is this second beast, this beast that comes up out of the earth. And when it says he comes up out of the earth, some people take it here that he's going to be a Jew. They take that he's going to come out of the land of Israel. I take it here that it just means he's going to come out of the earth in distinction to the fact that the Holy Spirit is from above or from heaven. Because you see, this is the false trinity. You have Satan, who's like the false God the Father. You have this first beast, who's an anti-son or an anti-Christ. And then this beast from the earth is like an anti-spirit. Because like the Holy Spirit gives all worship over to the Son and leads people to worship Christ, this beast from the earth is going to cause people to worship the Antichrist or this first beast. So this is like the unholy trinity, if you will, a false father, a false son, and a false spirit. Now, this beast out of the earth is often called in the book of Revelation. In fact, he's called 3 times the false prophet. So he's primarily associated with religious activity. I didn't mention this earlier, but let me just say this. I think the beast out of the sea is going to be a Gentile. The early church believed the Antichrist would be a Jew, but I think he's going to be a Gentile. One of the reasons is he comes up out of the sea. And the sea in the book of Revelation is the Sea of Nations. So he's going to come up out of the sea. Also, he's going to head up the final form of Gentile world power. It'd be odd for a Jew to be the leader of, you know, the final form of Gentile power. Also, the only real type, clear type or foreshadow in the Old Testament of the final world ruler is Antiochus Epiphanes back in Daniel chapter 8. Antiochus Epiphanes was a Gentile. And one final thing, this final world ruler, the Antichrist, is going to persecute the Jewish people mercilessly. It'd be odd for a Jew to be persecuting Jews. So I take it this world ruler, this final world ruler, will be a Gentile. And I believe that it's very likely this second beast, this false prophet, will be a Gentile as well. But notice how he's described here. It says he has 2 horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. So we have this terrible trio of the tribulation, Satan and the Antichrist and this false prophet. And notice his deceptive appearance. He has 2 horns like a lamb, so he looks kind of mild like a lamb, but he speaks like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. And he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. So he has a deceptive appearance. He has a devilish authority, and he has a deadly activity. That is, he's going to come and cause people on the earth to worship the first beast. He's going to be kind of like the propaganda minister for this world ruler, to cause people on the earth to worship him. Kind of for sake of time, let me just kind of side off here, and I've got an overhead for you to see on this, or a slide. Here are 10 identifying features of the false prophet here in Revelation 13. He rises out of the earth. Again, I think that pictures just his earthiness. He's not spiritual. He's just totally from the earth. He controls religious affairs. He's the one that causes people to worship the first beast. He's motivated by Satan. He promotes worship of the first beast. He performs signs and wonders. Again, this is going to be part of the delusion. He's going to make fire come down out of heaven, the same thing that Elijah did. He deceives those who dwell on the earth, and signs are given to him to perform. He deceives the world. He empowers the image of the beast. He actually makes an image of the Antichrist, a statue, and that image is animated and speaks. And I don't think that's just going to be some kind of a trick or a sleight of hand, because people today are pretty sophisticated. They'd figure that out pretty fast. Again, part of this delusion is going to be an image that's going to speak. He kills all who refuse to worship the Antichrist or the beast. He controls all economic commerce. You can't buy or sell without this mark. And he controls the mark of the beast. So he's going to be the henchman, or the lieutenant, or the propagandist who's going to work alongside this first beast. But one of the main things he's going to do is institute this mark of the beast. Down in verse 16, and he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the freemen and the slaves, to be given a mark on the right hand or on their forehead. And he provides no one can buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. So people are going to have to take this mark, and the word there in Greek is karagma. It's used of a tattoo or of an etching. They have to take it upon the right hand or upon the forehead. And ultimately, this mark of the beast will be a pledge of allegiance to the Antichrist. In other words, you're going to take his mark upon you. And I believe this mark is the numerical value of his name, because it says it's the number of a man. It's the number of his name. Now, some think that 666 is just symbolic of falling short of God's glory. That's the number of man. In other words, perfection would be 777. But God is telling him, no, you're not perfect. You're not 777. You're 666. You're just a man, even though you proclaim to be God and have the world worship you. But the way I understand this is, in ancient language, in Hebrew and Greek, the letters of the alphabet have numerical value. So you can take someone's name and take the numerical value of those letters and add that up, and you get a numerical value for their name. And I think this Antichrist, whoever this person is, when he shows up on the scene, his name will equal 666. Now, that doesn't mean that we go out now trying to figure out who the Antichrist is and counting up the numbers of people's and people's names. I don't think the Antichrist will be on the world scene till after the rapture. We don't want to jump the gun. I always tell people, if you ever figure out who the Antichrist is, I've got bad news for you. You've been left behind. You don't want to know who he is. We're looking for Christ, not the Antichrist. It's going to be when the restrainer is removed that this Antichrist is able to come on the world scene. So his name is going to equal 666. People are going to take that as a pledge of allegiance. In other words, when you take his name on your right hand or forehead, you're taking his name on you. You're giving your loyalty to him. There's going to be, unlike any time in human history, a clear-cut choice for people. Will they take Christ or will they take Antichrist? It's going to be that clear. And if people refuse to take Antichrist, they're not going to be able to buy or sell. So his motivation is going to be very simple. Worship me or starve. And many people, of course, will take this mark of the beast. So it's going to be the tribulation trademark, or your passport to be engaged in commerce in the end time. But it's a pledge of allegiance to the Antichrist. Let me just close here by giving quickly just 10 keys to understanding the mark of the beast. Let me mention these quickly. The mark is future, not past. It's not some past thing, it's future. It's a literal, visible brand, mark, or tattoo. The word here, upon the right hand of the forehead, means upon it. It's not going to be some chip under the skin or something that's upon it. It's going to be visible for people to be able to see. It'll be placed upon the right hand or forehead of people during the tribulation. It will be given as a sign of devotion to the Antichrist and as a passport to engage in commerce. The mark will be the number 666, which is the numerical value of the Antichrist's name. Number six, believers during the tribulation will be able to calculate the number and identify the Antichrist. Again, we don't need to be doing that now, but people in that time will be able to do that. Number seven, those who take the mark, I believe, will be eternally doomed. We'll see that next time when we get to chapter 14. Once you take that mark and you've made that choice, the die is cast. Number eight, before the rapture, this is critical, no one should attempt to identify the Antichrist or his mark or the number 666. I get things people write to me all the time. They figured out who the Antichrist is and they know these things. That's jumping the gun. We're not to try to do that now in this current age. Number nine, while current technology and methods of identifying and locating people strikingly foreshadow the ability of the Antichrist to control the world, no specific modern technology will be employed or should be identified as the mark of the beast. No one can say what technology will be employed to fulfill this prophecy, but what we see today makes such a system not only possible, but probable. So what I'm saying is, don't go out there and try to figure out some technology out there that is going to be used for this. We can be assured the Antichrist will use whatever technology is at his disposal. I mean, if he can, you know, put chips in people to identify where they are and control the world, he's going to do a lot of things to dominate the world because people can't buy or sell without this mark. So he's going to have iron-fisted economic, political, and religious control. But we shouldn't be trying to identify certain kinds of technology today as the mark of the beast or things like that. But I think we can rest assured he will use whatever he can to exercise his power. And then finally, number 10, I would say this. In spite of its association with evil, 666 will be received by those who willfully reject Christ during the tribulation. A lot of people say, well, I'd never take that. I mean, I've heard of that number before. Have you ever wondered how's the Antichrist going to get people to take that number? I mean, even people who don't know anything about the Bible know about that. Well, it could be the Antichrist. He's just so arrogant that he takes this number and forces people to take it. Or again, it's just part of the delusion that's going to be present on the earth during the end times. But you know, the globalism we see in our world today points toward this, doesn't it? We see the nations of the world coming together. People are looking for some great savior to come and bring peace and bring economic prosperity to the earth. And we see the world economy coming more and more together. And you go back to Revelation chapter 6, when the world economy collapses there and you have all this hyperinflation, people are going to come and look for somebody to bring answers. So we see in the globalism in our world today, I think, a setting of the stage for the kinds of conditions that are spoken of here in Revelation chapter 13. We don't know how much longer it will be until these events come to pass, but the things we see in our world today, to me, strikingly foreshadow what's stated for us here in this prophecy. We'll pick up next time in chapter 14, the final great chapter in this interlude. It's going to give us a great preview of coming attractions in the future. So Revelation chapter 14 next time.